We wanted to spend some time exploring another dimension of the mass killing in Pittsburgh, and that is the question of the weapons used. The shooter had 21 firearms registered in his name. According to the FBI, he took four of them with him into the Tree of Life synagogue. Three were Glock handguns. The fourth was a weapon that has become synonymous with mass shootings in the United States, the AR-15. To figure out why, we got in touch with C.J. Chivers, a former Marines infantryman, current correspondent for the New York Times, who wrote an entire book about the AK-47 and the combat weapons that the United States developed to counter it. Chivers says after mass shootings, there is a familiar pattern of reaction. Media accounts often misreport some detail of the make, model, or category of weapon used, and people immersed in gun culture seize on any perceived misreporting to steer the conversation toward technical hair splitting and away from broader questions of who should have access to guns and under what circumstances. Here's our interview.
The assault weapons, as we call them now in the popular imagination, these semi-automatic versions of military rifles that are fired one shot per trigger pull. They're automatically reloading. So you pull the trigger, a bullet leaves the barrel, and another cartridge is fed up into the chamber to be fired again. So they can be fired quite quickly. These are actually functionally used by the criminals in the way that most members of the American infantry will use their rifles. In other words, though the American infantry has rifles that can fire automatically or on burst, they are rarely used that way. And our soldiers and Marines are trained in the main not to use them that way because they're less accurate. They consume more ammunition. They're less effective. In most shooting, almost all shooting that a conventional infantry soldier or Marine will do will be on semi-automatic. So functionally, if Mr. Bowers had an AR-15, as the FBI has suggested, and it could only fire semi-automatically, he entered the synagogue with the firepower equivalent of a trained American Marine or soldier entering a building on a combat patrol.
I'm curious, what was your training as a Marine in terms of safety around your weapon?
You know, Marines don't have unlimited access to weapons. When they're not training with the weapons or carrying them on patrols and the like. But let's just talk about the United States. When you're not training with your weapon is secured, locked up in an armory with an armed guard. You know, I mean, think of a brick building with bars in the windows and a fence around it inside a compound that itself is secure. And to go get your weapon, you don't just go down and say, "I'd like my weapon, please." You have to have a reason, and you have to present a custody card that shows that it's actually your weapon. And when you're done doing whatever lawful thing you're doing with it, cleaning it with it or training with it, you need to return it, and it's registered back in its place. So, I mean, Marines don't have unlimited access to their weapons. They have access to their weapons only when their duties require them to.
So the military has more stringent gun control in that sense than civilian society.
The military is very wary about who has weapons and when. And keep in mind as well that the people who they're issuing the weapons to have been screened and vetted and trained and are operating in with a lawful hierarchical system. So, yeah, it's much different. That's not to say that all of our civilian owners perform, you know, or operate unsafely with weapons. Of course, many of them. Most of them that I know who own weapons, and I come from a family that owns weapons, store their weapons with great care, and they use them with great caution. They're nothing at all like Mr. Bowers. But, you know, safety's something of an odd conversation to have when we're talking about the way this weapon was used, but this weapon was used in egregious premeditated crime. And yep. So how Mr. Bowers stored it up to that point is kind of moot.
Yeah, but I think the point gun control advocates would raise is someone who goes out their door wanting to hurt people will probably hurt people. but the number of people they hurt and how badly they hurt them comes down to what kind of weapons they're able to lay their hands on.
Certainly a factor, yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about the evolution of the AR-15?
So the AR-15 was designed by an arms designer, former Marine, for military service. It was picked up by the Pentagon after it had been designed, and initially the designer and the company worked for were unsuccessful in marketing it at any scale, but the Pentagon eventually picked it up for general issue to its ground forces in response to the automatic Kalashnikov, the rifle that the communist forces of Vietnam were receiving in tremendous numbers, and that Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara determined were out shooting our forces with M14s and other weapons. So in a very hasty fashion, the United States military adopted the AR-15, renamed the M16. They adopted it for general issue to our infantry forces. Those weapons that were adopted were functionally and operationally similar to the AR-15 that are out there today. But they were very early in the design evolution of this system, so they weren't especially reliable. There was a lot of problems with them. And of course, because they were military weapons, those fired either semi-automatically or automatically. And then the weapons that are offered almost entirely now for civilian purchase fire semi-automatically only. But it's interesting because the American military, around about the 1980s, determined that the fully automatic function on most of its M16s was unnecessary. And so they did away with it. And troops now are issued weapons that fire a 3-round burst instead of the full automatic. And that's just what it sounds like. You pull the trigger when it's on burst, the barrel, the muzzle discharges 3 rounds, and then the rifle needs to have the trigger pulled again to continue to fire 3 more rounds, or you can switch a lever back up to single fire. Some soldiers do still carry the full automatic version, and they do have some applications, but most carry in this burst function only. The military decided that the full automatic function wasn't really necessary. It wasn't very effective. You burn through much. You burn through too much ammunition, and you don't hit very much. And burst was seen as sort of a middle step between the two.
So how did the semi-automatic version of a weapon that was commissioned for Vietnam come to have a widespread civilian market?
In some ways, it's because it was banned. You know, the federal assault weapons ban, which told, made these weapons, they put these weapons out of the reach of most Americans. And so, you know, what you can't have is in some ways coveted. And the AR-15 sort of became a symbol. And then when the ban expired and the weapons could be purchased again, there was a run on them. People who had waited for a long time to get them rushed out to buy them. And then after a series of mass shootings, which often re-energize a discussion about a new ban, each one of those can serve in some ways as a market shock and cause a run on the weapons again. The fear that a new ban might be coming causes weapon sales to spike. And I mean, I know some people in the arms business who, you know, said President Obama was very good for business because people were afraid that there might be a renewed ban, and that that spurred sales. So you know, the thing that you couldn't have, the thing that was unattainable, became very popular. The other thing that overlays that rather neatly is the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. These weapons became again common in the news. They became everyday images. They became very, very familiar in a way they had not been for many years. They entered movies, video games, news reports. You know, there are years here where you could not pick up a newspaper without there being a very good chance of seeing the M16 or the M4, which is the carbine version of the AR-15 in military service. without seeing these there. So they picked up a cultural significance as well. And they became, for people who want to own rifles, they became very popular, very, very popular. And there was a push as well by gun organizations promoting them, and gun and magazines analyzing them. And a whole conversation formed around them in part of the country, and solidified their place in the imagination and in the market.
C.J. Shivers, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
C.J. Shivers is a correspondent for The New York Times. He's won one Pulitzer and chaired another for his war reporting from Iraq and Afghanistan. His new book is The Fighters, American in Combat in Afghanistan and Iraq. But the book before this was a sweeping history of the AK-47 called The Gun.